Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored by the audiobook edition of Will Eisner, A Spirited Life, now available on iTunes and Audible.com, and recorded live from the new media capital of the world and former world headquarters of CrossGen Comics, Tampa Bay. About the future of comic books, drop by IndelibleComics.com. It's the online home of one writer and four artists, a place to see examples of their work as well as full graphic novels, plus you can order a hard copy of their products. As an enterprise, it's neat, clean, and highly functional, and the artwork and storytelling is damn good too. I invited writer Brendan McGinley to be my guest today because I like his style. I also like the way he's embraced new graphics technology and applied it to one of my favorite 20th century mediums. Now, if you're not familiar with McGinley's work, check it out while we talk about it here on Mr. Media. Again, it's Indelible Comics. That's I-N-D-E-L-I-B-L-E comics.com. And Brendan, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hey, Bob. Good to be here.
Hey, where are we anyway? Oh, yeah. You're a comic book guy. You could probably envision a scenario for us here.
Yeah. Well, right now it's cloudy and gray, so anywhere would be a step up.
Yeah. Well, Florida is the same right now, so I'm not going to be able to help you out much. Brendan, am I making too much about the way you've embraced technology in your work and with the site?
I'm not going to stop you. but I mean, I guess the first thing to do is give credit to Comic Press, who made the WordPress theme that is just so, you know, you can do in a, you know, one click, you can put a plug-in that would take you a couple of months to program yourself.
Well, but you still have to be accepting of the technology to do it.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, there's no reason not to be. I originally I was writing all this stuff for the print, you know, for print, which is why it gets sliced up into, you know, more web-friendly format, but I mean, by and large, it works great. There's no production costs, and I mean, when we started Hannibal Goes to Rome, when that got into Zuda, our first day, we got more readers than I think I've been able to. The first hour, we had more readers than I'd sold of copies of Dose the entire time I'd had it. So,
really,
yeah.
Well, so, I mean, are you finding there's an acceptance of the form? Is it a curiosity? You've been doing it for a while now. Where's it going, and what's the pickup rate?
It's definitely the way to go. I mean, the webcomics are just exploding. Everybody's got one. I mean, there's just more every day. But the hitch is, I mean, if you're trying to do, first off, if you're trying to do a long-form thing like we do with most of our stuff, it's not necessarily the best format because it does kind of break up the scene. Like if you have to, you know, take 2 weeks, the best you can do is divide a regular size comic book page in half. And that's about the right size for a comic book, for a computer screen. That kind of, you know, takes people out of the scene, but we collect it all in the galleries and then they can just come in and, you know, find it on the menu bar and read it there. The funny thing is that the first print comic I did, Dose, was I'd never planned to put it on the web, and it's the one that's lent itself most readily to it because, you know, it's all these little short humor bits. They're, you know, one to eight pages, so there's not so much of a hitch in getting the reader immersed in the scene.
What is different? If you were writing for print versus if you're writing for online, how is it different? How would you approach it differently? How would it be seen differently?
Well, if you're going to assume that you're getting it all out at once, there's no reason that, you know, you have to put out a page a week the way we do. We just, you know, do that to keep people coming back every day. you might put your breaks in a little different. You might, you know, have more. There's a tendency among scripting comics you want to put a reveal on the other side of the page, so it's not, you know, the first thing people see when they turn the page of the book. That's not so much a problem on the screen, but you do have fewer panels, so you probably it's really just a squash and stretch question. I mean, I don't see a huge difference. I know the one thing that I haven't heard is that in a lot of these comic book readers, if you preload the images too much and then they can just, you know, appear right there as soon as somebody clicks, you almost lose something because that moment the page is turning, the person's eye travels back to the upper left side of the page. So that's kind of what I prefer is a gallery that displays. This is boring. Let's talk about violence.
I find it interesting. It's because, I mean, I don't think most people who read print, I mean, the comic book people who are real hardcore, obviously they're going to find you anywhere. But people who are more casual about it, I think they're probably hesitant to read online and look at these things online.
Yeah, you know, it's an odd thing. It's almost, I think it's, and it is also the problem a lot of people have monetizing their work, is I think it's perceived value. I think it's kind of that deal that, well, if you're giving it away online for free, I mean, and even Warren Ellis has talked about this. He runs Freak Angels, and mm-hmm. He says, you know, he's got all these people that are fans of his work, but they don't want to read this free online Warren Ellis comic. They're just waiting for the trade, and it's almost like if people feel they paid for something, they're already invested in it. But the other way that they can feel that they're invested in it is if they're, you know, part of the community, which is why I like the day-by-day page format, because it encourages people to leave a comment, and then we can leave a little director's commentary, and you can get a little bit more than you would get if you were just going to buy the eventual print edition.
And I think on your site, you can get involved with conversation with people.
Yeah.
For some of these, like Hannibal, right? I mean, it the whole idea of the web, the social network, the whole thing, it gives that added dimension. And then you never know, I guess, when the one of the creators might turn up in the conversation.
Yeah. I remember back in AOL 2.0 or whatever, how thrilled I was to be in a chat room with, like, you know, Kevin Dooley and all these guys that were editing comics that I loved back then. I mean, I think that's still a great part of it, and I love that. I mean, that's part of what I love about comics, is people feel like they own it, people feel like they're involved in it, and that's why, I mean, I try to get enough comments for a work that I can have a letter column when I end up printing an issue of each book.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, you know, it's not always the kind of thing that you can put straight into a letter column. You know, sometimes it's a comment that just pertains to that day's strip or that kind of thing.
Have you encountered, among other creators, online comics or strips that you really like, that you think the creators have found a good way to make it work and play online?
I mean, as far as playing to the medium?
Yeah.
I mean, I know, I mean, there's plenty of great storytellers. As I was reading one just yesterday, actually. God, what was the name of it? This guy has a phenomenal art style, looks straight out of anime, and he would basically lay out a page, but each panel only appeared as you clicked on the page. So there was no spoiler. But I'm not sure how I feel about that, because, yeah, you read a comic panel by panel, but kind of what the storytelling arises from is in the montage, you know, in that gutter between the panels. I've been thinking about that since yesterday, trying to figure out if that's if something's lost or gained. But one thing we wanted to do was what I wanted to do with Heist was, you know, there's this whole bit where this guy's breaking into this satellite and he's trying to steal this artifact that nobody's sure really what it does, but it's really super powerful. And then he gets there and it was supposed to be this big, amazing splash page kind of thing. And I should say that the guy's powers is that he basically becomes a ghost, and he finds out that even though he's a ghost, he can pick this thing up, which is really weird. I was going to have try to make an animated GIF out of that so that you were looking at a static comic panel, but in the middle of that is this four-dimensional object that's just going blub, 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 changing shape. It didn't really pan out because the only animation we found of a hypersphere really didn't fit in with quite with the art style we had, but I'm very grateful to the guy who animated it, Bert Kloff, and he said we were free to use it if we wanted.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. If you and any of your creative partners have experimented much with Flash animation for the strips, or if you think that's something ahead of you.
I only used it as a gallery. I know a lot of people, there's this whole debate about what's a comic, is a motion comic a comic, and people really get concerned about this stuff. It just boils down to if it works, it works. And I think a lot of motion comics don't work, and I think a lot of them, if you're waiting to introduce elements that tell your story, what you have is a very base animation, but it's still a bit of a gray line. What I think the use of Flash will be, if and like I said, I wanted to do this with the hypersphere, is to make ambient stuff. I mean, things that don't actually change a panel, but do lend a sense to it. So if you had a panel of people in a nightclub and there was a strobe light changing colors in the background, or people, there was a waterfall moving in the background, those are things that you apprehend immediately upon looking at the panel, but they're also things that, they kind of add a touch to it that you can't do in print.
So do you expect that as time rolls on that you'll do that? You'll do some of that or do more of it?
Well, I'll do it if it's appropriate. I'm not gonna bend just to, see this comic in 3D animation kind of thing. It ultimately you have to tell a good story. Or in our case, tell a mediocre story with great art.
All right, well, I know you're dying to talk about violence, so tell me about violence in comics.
Violence in comics. I'm new to action in comics. I look back at the stuff I was writing when I was in college, and it's like, why don't you just do a novel and just go away? It's so emo. It's just, I had this entire, I guess it's kind of the counterpart to Invisible Ink. If Invisible Ink is kind of like the secret history, the conspiracy, the real story, then this would be like the actual history book of comics. And I realized the protagonist doesn't do anything. he's just there, and people are around him, and stuff's happening, and he kind of puts a stop to it, but he's the most inert guy. And it was kind of like the thesis was, real heroes don't go around bashing people's skulls in, and I was playing off this Little Nemo theme, because Little Nemo was kind of passive in those old Winsor McCay strips. But I'm retooling it now. I look back and I'm like, dude, got to at least make a decision somewhere. So violence is pretty new. I've been experimenting with how I use it. So yes, I do have something to say about violence. In Heist, it's kind of, it's just always, Geist always has something he's going to do. He's not, his first take is to keep a low profile, but he has no problem, shooting you in the face. Mm-hmm. And then in Invisible Ink, we kind of withhold that violence and just use it once or twice in an issue just to really kind of snap you and it comes when it's least expected. And I mean, if you ever look at the way people actually fight or the way violence actually happens, it's not like this whole thing in comic books where there's these two heroes and they encounter each other and they have this mistaken identity and they start throwing punches. Like I saw a fight on the subway platform about a year ago, and it was like a guy in a business suit and some junkie or something. It was just the weirdest thing, the way you could see it was building up and you could see the way it was, it was going to happen. You knew one of these guys was going to sucker punch the other, but it hadn't happened, but that kind of moment of tension, then it was scary, but by and large, from a dramatic perspective, it's not something I think you see enough in comics.
Well, Brendan, let me ask you this: why did you become a writer? Why in comics? Why not fiction or
I have no idea. I've been drawing about twice as long as I've been writing. But I think I really kind of hit my limit on how well I can draw, whereas I just turned out to be a better writer. I don't know why, but I just, you know, as a kid, I read comics, and I would draw them in school with my friends like everybody else, and eventually you just kind of come to a point where you just decide, you know, this is something you have to do. This is there's a story that's got to get out there, and, you know, it doesn't matter if nobody reads it, it just has to get out of you and get down, and then it's like it happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It takes on some reality. I think the other thing that helps is to get really angry at bad stories. I think if you, you know, comics are like anything else. There's, you know, 80% of them are garbage. And on, you know, if I had any musical ability, I'd probably be trying to write in response to bad radio. But I think Irving Berlin, maybe somebody said, you know, if you hate elevator music, write elevator music you like. So I quit comics. I quit reading them like end of high school, early college, and then I just realized, you know, I was like, you know, this is just soap opera. Like, you know, X-Men are never going to achieve peace and love. Spider-Man's never going to get over his guilt. Like, and that's cool. Like, I mean, like, now looking back, I appreciate it. But I just kind of felt like, you know, why did I care about all that stuff? And then those were good comics. So somehow I ended up getting free comics via jobs and roommates and internships for the next several years. So I kind of kept in touch with them, and I just kind of was like, yeah, that's cool, but what if it went like this? I have no answer for you, Bob.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. But you're supposed to come to the table here with loaded with answers. That's the whole idea of an interview. But
Ask me the meaning of life.
I mean, are you one of these guys whose head is like bursting with stories? I mean, when you lie down at night, are you like, oh, hey, I got an idea? Or, you know.
Oh, no, that's the terrible part is, like I say, I can't write music, but when I'm lying in bed at night, like, I can hear music, and I know I'll never be able to write it down, and it's gone the next morning. No, not so much. I mean, during the day, when I'm going to sleep, it's music or drawing. Like, it's all these things that don't require a ton of word thought that your brain brings you. But, yeah, day-to-day, I mean, it's just, you go around and you encounter stuff, and it just strikes you as, you know, what if this was that, or this is really good, someone should write it down. It's just, I don't know, it's just this desire to preserve things, maybe. Just, you know, people are interesting.
Something else I was curious about, you're writing a number of projects, and different people draw them. Do you, you know, are you surprised when you see how different things come out? You know, I mean, that's the thing about writing comics as opposed to writing fiction. You write fiction, each reader, you and each of the readers, has that picture in their mind about what the characters look like and that kind of thing. When you do comics, if you write it and someone else draws it, it could turn out very differently than you envisioned it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's usually for the best. And if you're working with good artists, I'd say 9 times out of 10, you end up looking at it and saying, "Wow, I can't believe somebody just reached into my head and pulled out exactly what I wanted based on this bare bones, you know, 4-line paragraph." Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and if they add stuff, it's usually because they get it and, you know, it works better. Very rarely have I had an artist kind of miss what I was talking about in a panel. Or I did have one try to change the entire story on me. I had a bit where I was, there's a scene in Invisible Ink where this reporter is meeting with this woman who claims to have a story for her, and she claims to have been a world-famous superhero, but she doesn't have any powers anymore, and nobody remembers her. And it's kind of this crazy tale that she's, you know, you would have no reason to believe. But then the woman gets very, very, very upset, and she ends up generating just enough heat from her fingertips to kind of sear this styrofoam coffee cup in her hands. Mm. And, you know, it gives the reporter something to go by and say, okay, I'm going to hear you out. well, this artist goes off and he says, you know, that's no good. Here's what I'm going to do. She's just going to throw the coffee cup away. The reporter's going to take it, bring it back to the newspaper, check the fingerprints, and then identify her. And I'm like, I have no problem with you changing a panel to tell a story. I'm not, you know, it's a collaboration. You have to meet somebody halfway. You have to be willing to recognize that, you know, you're not the only one with ideas. And, you know, that's usually very easy. But if you're going to go off and change a story, like, let me tell you what's wrong with that. First off, reporters don't have fingerprint kits. There's no reporter database of fingerprints. There's no way to check that stuff. Second, the entire story that this woman is telling is that she was just wiped out from everyone's memory, from every history, that there's no record of her. So there wouldn't be a record to look up. And third, why would you take away this cool scene where she's, like, this showed that she does have some, she is talking about something, she has some kind of superpowers, like, but fortunately that doesn't happen very often. It just makes a good story.
that would be, I would not want to be a writer and have a Frank Miller coming in to draw my story, because you know he's going to have his own ideas. I'm just using Frank. He just comes to mind. He's going to want to do it his own way, which is why he writes in.
He'll add some mohawks and some rear end shots and yeah. But then you got to remember, even Frank Miller has to go through Klaus Janson. And Klaus Janson will steamroll any pencil he wants. Like, so everybody, you know, everybody brings something, you know. Ideally, it's better because of everyone who's worked on it.
Mm-hmm. Now, coming back to sort of where we started, a lot of the issues that creators have with comics online is that the business model is kind of iffy. Now, obviously, you're doing for print as well, but are you able to earn a living between all this, or do you have to do other things, or...?
Yeah, I'm doing a bunch. I'm doing some work for Cracked, which is fun because you just get to make fun of everything that makes you angry. And I have just gotten in touch with some people at Asylum and Maxim. You know, like little freelance blogging kind of things. Pick it up. I'm fortunate to have the only cheap rent in New York City and pretty low budget. So I'm not making a ton of money, but I am treading water, which is okay for an online comic book maker.
And where is this going?
Why are you asking these painful questions? What?
That's what we do. Where is
children
all going?
Need food. Where are we going?
Yeah. Now, where is this all going for you? I mean, if you looked ahead 5 years, will you be doing most of your work electronically? Will you be doing print? Do you think that comics will be able to support you?
I don't know about support. I hope. I mean, this is I've set myself, I'm going to be 30 in September, so I've set myself the idea that I have to have pulled off some kind of milestone before I turn 30 or I'm done. I'm going to have all my material done by then. I mean, you know, obviously it won't all be drawn, but if I can't make something happen by then, I'm just going to go plant trees. I don't know.
Oh, that's
because I've been doing this for a decade. I mean, I pretty much gave my 20s. When I was 20, I was an intern at Marvel and DC, and then I was at Wizard, and then I've been doing my own comics since I left Wizard in 2005. I was doing my own comics before that, but like I got, you know, I started hiring other artists and such and actually getting things done because I'm terrible and slow. So, I mean, I would say like 2004 or 5 was when it was really underway. So, yeah, I've been very lucky. I've been able to work with some terrific artists and they're enthusiastic guys. And, you know, there's been really great, you know, reaction from readers and you know, people like you have been very helpful in helping to get it out there. So, I think this is a make or break year where I can hopefully, you know, maybe I won't be making a living from it, but at the very least, you know, get something out there, get something going, make some kind of mark, and then I'll see. Because, you know, like you say, it's tough to make a living at it. So you really gotta grind for 17 hours a day and hope the payoff comes down the road.
Absolutely. Well, look, folks, help out a poor starving artist. test drive some of Brendan McGinley's comics, including Hannibal Goes to Rome, which is really, really cool to read and to follow. The style is a little bit of humor, a little bit of violence. It's cool. You can find these online at his website. It's indeliblecomics.com. That's I-N-D-E-L-I-B-L-E comics, all solid, indeliblecomics.com. And Brendan, it was very interesting. It was nice to get to be familiar with your work and see some things I hadn't seen before. So thanks so much for coming on the show and joining us in Mr. Media today.
Oh, it was great fun. It was a lot of fun.
All right. Hopefully good news by the time you're 30.
Hopefully. Gray hairs.
Yeah.
All right, you take
those
care.
Those are coming no matter what. All right, thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And folks, for more interviews with your favorite comic book, comic strip, and graphic novel artists and writers, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's MrMedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Josh Neufeld, Patrick McDonald, Ray Billingsley, Jerry Scott, Rick Kirkman, Jim Borgman, John Rosenberg, Stefan Pastis, Mark Tatulli, Mort Walker, Dennis Kitchen, Drew Friedman, Dave Givens of Watchmen, Joe Sinnott, Howard Cruz, Mark Chiarello, Freddie Williams, Gene Colan, and many more. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or www.facebook.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.